So what I'd like to do this evening is learn with us about the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. The mitzvah of Talmud, which might be translated as learning, but what we're going to see is that there's an integral relationship, a reciprocal relationship, a symbiotic relationship between learning and teaching, and that the lines between the two merge and blur, that we can't really distinguish that well between what's considered learning and what's considered teaching. And I hope through the journey of looking at some sources within the Jewish realm as well as within the pedagogic educational realm, we can have a deeper and better understanding of how we can all learn better and teach better, whether or not we're educators officially or not. In a sense, we are all educators and we all are learners. So if we can understand this relationship better, we can improve and enhance our ability to learn and to teach. So our starting point is to look at the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Talmud Torah, the laws of Talmud Torah, has what seems to be a confusing starting point, in the sense that, and he contradicts himself often as it relates to the mitzvah of learning, and that is what is incorporated and encapsulated within the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. And in numerous places he says slightly different things. What he says here is that in his introduction to Hilchos Talmud Torah, he says that there's two mitzvahs that he's about to talk about. One is the mitzvah of Lilmo Torah, to learn, and the other mitzvah is L'chabed Milamdeha V'yodeha, to honor those who teach it and those who know it. And what's absent from the Rambam's description here is teaching of Torah. He says that the mitzvah is to learn and to honor those that teach it. But he doesn't say the mitzvah is to teach it. And in other places, he does mention that there's a mitzvah to teach it. But here, as he's about to delineate the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, he just says learning and doesn't say teaching. So that's question number one. Where's teaching within this description? Question number two relates to the second part of this screen, for those who can see it on the screen. For those who are watching on Facebook, I will translate and explain everything, but we're going to be reading from the PowerPoint that we're doing on Zoom. So the PowerPoint here in the second text box says in the first halacha, this is how the Rambam starts the halacha of Talmud Torah. The halacha is that nashim avadim k'tanim, women, slaves, and children, are peturim mitalmud Torah. They're absolved from the mitzvah of learning Torah. And if we had more time, we'd elaborate on why that is and how that is and what the distinctions between being obligated and electing to do something is. But let's leave it at face value from now. These are the people that are exempt from learning Torah. But a katan aviv chayav lalamdo. His father is obligated to teach him. Somebody who's a child, his father is obligated to teach him Torah. Shenemar v'limadtem osam es b'neichem l'daber bam. As the pasuk says, you should teach your children talking Torah to them. Ve'ena isha chayev es lamed es b'na, shekol chayev lumod chayev l'lamed. And a woman is not obligated to teach her son Torah, because anybody who's obligated to learn is obligated to teach. But if you're not obligated to learn, you're not obligated to teach. And what the question, the glaring question is that this is a very strange way to start off the halachos of Talmud Torah. If I was asking you, if I gave you the opportunity to start with your first sentence of what you would, the first thing you would say in terms of what the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is, it's very odd that the Rambam doesn't tell us anything of a positive quality. He says, who's exempt from Talmud Torah? Who's exempt from learning? And then his example of somebody who's learning here is the katan, his father is obligated to teach him. So he starts off out of the gate, not with a person, you know, an adult male over the age of bar mitzvah is obligated to learn. That's not how he starts. I would have expected him to start something like that, because this is the first law of Talmud Torah. Here's who's obligated to learn Torah. But he doesn't start like that. He starts off with who's exempt, and then he starts off with the father is not obligated to learn, the father is obligated to teach his son. So our starting point is teaching, not learning. So he starts off saying in the first text box, the introduction, that there's a mitzvah to learn Torah. And then his first thing out of the gates that he says is that a father is obligated to teach his son Torah. So why not start off with a father is obligated or an adult male is obligated to learn Torah? And we can get more complex and more descriptive of other Rambams, but we're going to leave it for now with those two questions and give one answer suggested by Rabbi Milton Polan. Rabbi Milton Polan was a rabbi at Kingsway Jewish Center, where I'm now the assistant rabbi. Rabbi Polan was there. Rabbi Toker is the rabbi now. Rabbi Goldstein was before that. Rabbi Polan was before that. And Rabbi Polan wrote, author, he just passed away this past a little bit over a year ago. He wrote Sfarim on the Rambam. And one of those Sfarim, quoting you here, is on Hilchos Talmud Torah. And what he suggests, with, again, some more complications and nuance, but for the simplicity of where we want to go today, is he says the Rambam is going back and forth between teaching and learning, learning and teaching. And he's confusing, and he starts with teaching, switches to learning, goes to learning, switches to teaching, for the purpose of teaching us that, if you look at the last line, that mi shelomed chayev lalamed u mi shemelamed chayev lilmod v'chozer hadin iafshar zeh b'li zeh. That somebody who's obligated to learn is obligated, somebody who's obligated to teach is obligated to learn, somebody who's obligated to learn is obligated to teach, and it's reciprocal, and it keeps going. And you can't have one without the other. The two are integrally connected, that you can't separate the two. In the conception of Talmud Torah and the Jewish thought of what learning and teaching is that they're inseparable. Learning and teaching go hand in hand, and they bounce back off of each other, and they reciprocate off of each other, and you can't have one without the other. Ef shar zeh b'li zeh. So there's a strong connection between learning and teaching. In the literature in education, there's something called the protege effect. And this is going to help us understand this deeper connection between learning and teaching. The protege effect, and Avi Hoffman, who's watching on Facebook, says he never understood certain things that he learned until he taught them. Right? And that's exactly a great segue into where we're going with this. Is the protege effect is that when people end up teaching, that's how they learn. They learn best when they teach. And that's called learning by teaching, or the protege effect. And maybe we're familiar with this idea. It's not that novel of a concept. We've all probably experienced it on our own, that we learn better when we actually teach it. And what I want to do tonight is to delve deep into this concept and not just leave it as a surface idea that learning leads to teaching and teaching leads to learning, but to understand the depth of the mechanisms of how that happens. How is it that by learning, by teaching, I learn better? What's going on? How can we articulate those distinctions? And we're going to do that as both from a educational perspective, look at some of the research, as well as from a Talmud Torah perspective, look at some of the Jewish sources on this idea. So the first thing I want to start off with in terms of the Jewish texts, or after we saw the Rambam, is that we have this concept, and the title of this year was a play on words, right? Learning by teaching and teaching by learning. So we have a concept that we learned in Perkei Avos in two different places. You have it here on the first source, Rabbi Shmuel Beno Omer Halomed Torah Al Menas Lelamed, somebody who learns Torah in order to teach. So learning in order to teach is Maspikin Biyado Lilmod Lelamed. Then I'm granted study and teaching. So that by me, if I learn, if my motivation when learning is in order to teach, I'm granted both learning and teaching. So by teaching, I'm also learning and I'm also teaching. So what we're going to do at the end is look into some of the commentaries to understand that on a little bit more of a deeper level. But for now, as a starting point, here's learning in order to teach allows me both to learn and to teach. You see that in source number two also, Lomed Almanas Lalamed. Similar concept is in the sixth chapter of Pirkei Avos. It's one of the 48 ways of acquiring Torah. If I want to acquire Torah, I have to learn in order to teach. So again, in order to acquire Torah, learning, I have to teach in order to learn. And then finally, another famous statement from the Gemara Makos, Ravina Amar Kola Oev Lalamed Bahamon Lo Tvua Vahainu Da Amar Rebbe Harbe Torah Lamati Mirabosai Umichavere Yoser Mehem Umitamidai Yoser Mikulam. The idea in the Gemara presented first by Ravina is that if I love to teach a lot of people, if I love to teach in abundance, then my knowledge of Torah is going to increase. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda Nasi said. I've learned a lot from my teachers. I've learned a lot from my colleagues. But I learned the most from my students. Mitamidai Yoser Mikulan. And again, we want to understand, what is this about? How is it that I'm learning from my students? How is it that the process of teaching makes me a better learner? What are the mechanisms involved? So let's take a dive into the educational research. So one of the first articles that explored this idea is in 1980, the Journal of Educational Psychology, John Barge and Yaakov Shul, both at the time were in Michigan. John Barge, I believe now is at Yale, and Yaakov Shul is in Hebrew University. And what they wanted to do was explore this question, right? There's plenty of concepts out there that teaching helps me learn better, but why is that? What's going on here? So here's what they outline. They outline three different hypotheses as to why it is that teaching helps with learning. And they fall into three different categories. There's the preparation category, the delivery category, and the clarifying category. The reason why teaching helps me become a better learner and retain more information can either be because of I prepare differently, or in the delivery, that's what makes me understand and learn things better, or in the process of clarifying and the back and forth with students, maybe that's what makes me learn better. So let's break this down even more. So in the prepare stage, how is it that by me preparing as a teacher, so I'm going to teach this subject, how is it that that's going to allow me to learn better? So one possibility is that it's just a matter of time. As a teacher, I have to spend a lot of time preparing the material. And if it's hours and hours and hours of preparation, then that information is going to stick better. It's going to help with my memory just as a matter of adding time to the process. So that's one possibility. Another possibility is that by me thinking and processing in order to teach, so I'm reading, I'm learning, I'm going through sources with the mindset that this has to come out and somebody else has to listen and understand this, then it's going to be more organized in my brain. I'm going to look at facts and the relationship between facts. I'm not just going to read quickly. I'm going to start playing around with ideas to make it more clear and structured in my brain. And I might try to find some underlying similarities between concepts. So my brain is already primed to not just be necessarily a passive learner, just to bring in the ideas. I'm already thinking about how I'm going to understand these concepts on a broader level, the organization, the connection between concepts, because in order for me to teach, I need to be able to explain it in those more clear fashion. So already in the preparation stage, the processing of information is going to help me understand what I'm learning better. In the delivery phase, the second part here, they suggest that just the verbally conveying of information, by me articulating something with my words, that itself has a powerful impact on my retaining of information. If the idea is just stuck in my head and I'm thinking it through, no matter how clear I think that idea is, until I actually articulate it, until it comes out and I verbalize it, it's not necessarily going to be retained as well. The process of speaking helps me convey the information that much better. And then finally, in the clarifying stage, this is after I've prepared, and maybe the preparation is better. And after I've delivered it, the delivery is better because I'm speaking it out. Now the students might not understand everything I'm saying. So they're going to ask me to explain, to clarify. And oftentimes what happens is that those things that I'm not sure about are the things that they ask me about. students have a knack for picking up on what I'm not so clear, I'm not so sure about. So they ask questions, and not on purpose, but just because that's the way it is. If I don't know it so well, that's where they're gonna pick on those sore spots that I don't understand so well. So now I'm gonna have to review it better for myself. I'm not gonna be able to get away with semi-understanding something because the students are going to push back on me. And then when I explain that content the second time, I have to do it in a slightly different way. So the first time I tried to understand and explain it, the students didn't get it. And when they didn't get it, now I have to think, oh, if they didn't get it the first time, I can't just repeat the second thing the second time the same exact way I did it the first time because they didn't understand that. And it's not like, you know, banging a nail with a hammer. I have to think about a different way of presenting that information. And once I think about that, I have to look at the issues from a different perspective. And now I might think about it in new ways that I wasn't able to think about it previously. So in this hypothesis now, it's in the clarifying stage that allows students, the teacher, to learn better because the students are challenging the teacher to understand and communicate even more clearly. So these are the three areas that they hypothesize could potentially be the reasons why we learn better when we teach. And from 1980 until now, if you do a quick review of the literature, you'll see that various studies suggest different components of this. And there's as we use in Gemara terminology, there's nafgaminas here. There's differences. There's distinctions between which one of these are actually accurate. It might be a little bit of everything, but if the focus is on the preparation, then in theory, I could prepare and not deliver, and I would still get the gains. I mean, let's say I wanted to take the message here and say that I want to be somebody who's learning Almanas Lalamed. Well, is the learning Almanas Lalamed about the preparation? So this way I can have a mindset whenever I learn something that I'm going to deliver this to a student. And then even if I don't end up delivering the idea to a student, I still get the gain, right? That would be if it's in the preparation stage. But if you say the preparation stage is not really what's important, and it's in the delivery, it's in the communication, the conveying of the information, well then can I convey the information in a way, but let's say I don't have students there. Let's say I'm just talking to my soda bottle, or I'm talking to my pet, or I'm talking to a robot. As we'll see, there's actually some research on this, and there's some programs that do such a thing. So by me delivering the information, so now I'm preparing and delivering, is that enough to get the benefits of learning in order to teach? Or is it really the essential part is the clarifying? It's that give and take. It's the back and forth. It's the students challenging me. And if that's the case, then I need to prepare and teach, and I need the students there. And I need them to push back. So if I have great students, and great in the sense that they understand everything, they're quiet, or they don't understand anything and they stay quiet because they don't want to pay attention so much, so they're not challenging me. Well, is that really going to help me learn better if the students aren't pushing back and asking questions and trying to clarify what I've been taught to them? So this is important to know and to try to identify what is it about learning in order to teach that allows that process of teaching to be so effectual to help me learn even better. So besides for those three sections, there's actually a few more possibilities in terms of what might help the teaching process allow for better learning. And the reason why this is important is because it helps both teachers, and as we'll see, this is also going to help students, because this isn't just about teaching. This is also about being a student. And maybe our students can become teachers. We'll talk about that shortly. But there's what we call non-cognitive factors. We just explained everything was in terms of how I understand the information better when I'm planning on teaching it. But there's another component here, not just about how well I understand the information, but if I'm teaching, that can provide me more motivation to want to learn. So if I'm just a passive learner or somebody who's just reading on my own, but I'm not planning on teaching it, I might not be so motivated to really understand or to even try that hard to go through the subject material. But once I'm teaching, now that can give me a drive, that can give me a passion, that can give me a desire to want to learn and learn and learn and learn and learn. In addition, it provides a sense of autonomy. Let's say, again, a student's usually taught and told information. And now we're saying to the student, you know what, I want you to teach the information. Well, now I have some power. I have some autonomy. I'm free to choose how I want to teach, what I want to teach, what content I want to teach. And that autonomy psychologically is very powerful and helps build that motivation, because now I'm doing this on my own. I'm doing it because I have the choice and the freedom to do it. I'm not necessarily just being forced to listen to information. In addition, by teaching, it helps students and teachers communicate better. By me having to know that somebody's going to listen to me and trying to figure out a way that they're going to understand, that their brain, whoever they are, is going to be able to hear what I have to say, then I have to think about how I'm going to communicate that message. So it helps with communication skills. And then finally, it builds efficacy or competency, which means that I feel good about it. I just taught something. So besides for all of the cognitive factors, all the thinking things that might benefit by me teaching, there's also a whole emotional component and a self-esteem that comes about when I'm able to teach others. And those skills shouldn't be dismissed either. Those also are essential for people to develop. So how does this work? So we're talking so far framing it in terms of teachers, but as I've alluded to, this is important for teachers to give their students or parents to give their children the opportunity to be able to teach. And if we're not teachers and we don't have students and we're not parents, we maybe want to start looking for ourselves to not just be learning on our own, but looking for opportunities to teach, because teaching enhances the learning experience. It helps me understand and retain better. So in a classroom, and I know there's teachers on this Zoom call and watching on Facebook, and some non-teachers on the Zoom call and watching on Facebook, so I'm not going to get too lost in the weeds here in terms of every single element here of teaching in the classroom. And I'm going to assume that the teachers will at least know what I'm talking about, and those who aren't teachers will get the basic idea. But in terms of the classroom, we can use what's called peer tutoring, which is that I have students teach other students. And that's really where a lot of this research on the protege effect occurs, is within a context of peer tutoring. We have in a Jewish context, chavrusas. People are learning with each other, and there's an element of give and take, back and forth of teaching and learning, and that happens in a chavrusa setting. It's very important. That's similar to the concept of cooperative learning. And then there's a concept in the classroom called think, pair, share. So you have the student think, and then they talk to their friend about it, and they share with somebody else about it. So now it's not just them thinking on their own, but they have to communicate it to others. That's another way of having your students become teachers in the classroom. They're responsible to teach the information to their friend. And then there's a more complicated concept called jigsaw, where basically all the students get a chance to teach something else that other students don't know to those students. So you're basically creating a classroom where your students become teachers in their own way, and that they are responsible to teach the information to others. And by doing this, you get all the benefits of teaching by learning, of the protege effect. Because I'm learning in order to teach, and that's going to help me learn and understand better. To go one step further in the educational material before we transition to the Jewish topics here, even though the whole concept here is framed within the Jewish concept, but before we see the Jewish sources inside. So there's four interesting applications here of this within the context of technology and some more creative ways of looking at this. So going back to why it is that learning in order to teach is so effective. So there are those that, this is a concept in computer science and coding, which I don't know anything about, but I came across it through the educational material. It's called rubber duck debugging. that apparently when coders are learning to code, they'll basically teach or try to figure out, they'll use a concept of a rubber duck in order to be able to teach this rubber duck to double check if there's any problems within the coding. Again, I don't know exactly what I'm talking about when it comes to the computer piece, but the point here is that they're externalizing their learning to an outside object that's not actually a student. It's an inanimate object. It's a rubber duck. But even pretending that I'm teaching a rubber duck is going to help me make sure that I understand my material better. And in the educational literature, some people copy that, and they call it somewhat jokingly a plastic platypus learning. Just a different inanimate object that you teach that object, and by teaching that object, you will learn better. So that's one way of doing this, even without being in a classroom and even without having anybody there. We are modeling some level of externalizing our thoughts to pretend at least that something else out there can understand what I'm saying and can understand what I'm trying to communicate. On the top right, we have something called Betty's Brain, which is used in some schools districts, which it's basically an avatar. It's computerized that you as a student in elementary school are teaching environmental science to Betty's Brain. So you have a little picture of Betty there, and that this is a Betty, meaning the computer program, is able to engage with you on some level as a student. So the Betty is the student, and it's challenging you as, even though you are a student in a classroom, you are taking on the role of a teacher to Betty. And by you teaching Betty, you then understand the material better. And the students who use Betty's Brain, the research shows, have done better in their environmental science subjects than students who use regular classic teaching styles. And then finally, in the bottom right, you have what's called a family playlist, which is to take this idea that teaching is so important, and that if I want to learn better, I want to teach it. And how do I do that with my students? How do I make my students into teachers? So what a family playlist does is that it engages the parents, that the students have to teach the parents or their siblings or somebody else in the household, so that there's an engagement and a back and forth. This helps with family, school family partnerships as well. There's an engagement and back and forth between the family and the teacher, but the student becomes the teacher of the family. And that gives the student the opportunity to gain all of those essential elements of what teaching does for the learning process. So let's transition and take everything we just said about the pedagogic educational psychology of learning by teaching and see more in depth what the Torah sources have to say about it. And what we will see, to foreshadow, is that there's some overlap with what we saw in the educational materials, but there's also added elements that I think are essential to think about that Judaism offers in addition to everything that the educational material offered. And this is a general broad point that I think is important as somebody who, likes psychology, likes education. What's the connection between the psychology and the... Hold on one second. I'm just going to mute somebody. Okay. What's the connection between psychology and or educational materials and the Jewish sources? So it's important to compare and contrast, not to say, not to put one down or put one above, but necessarily it's just about to see the differences. When you compare and contrast them, you can see what essentially becomes, where there's an overlap and where the distinctions are. And I think as Jewish educators, we want to find out what those distinctions are and maybe accentuate, to highlight and to add on to whatever the educational material says. Well, here's our tradition, what our tradition has to add to that. So if we start off here, where we think about now why it is that teaching helps me with the learning process. So we did that within the education sources. Here's what the Jewish sources have to say. Why? Why does it work? Why is it that by teaching I learn better? So our starting point here is two Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos, and these Mishnayos basically say similar things, which is we should honor our friends, we should honor our students, we should honor others. It's really important to honor people. So Rav Matisyahu Etzari, in the bottom of the source, says, why is it that it's so important to honor people? Why is it so important to honor our friends? It's so important to honor our students. So he says, Ve'emezem musar gadol laharbus haTorah l'kayim hakibbutz. It is essential to honor and respect people for two reasons. Number two, start with the second one, is that socially, we need a community. In order to have a community, we have to respect each other. That's obvious. But what he adds here, which is not as clear, but when we think about it, becomes obvious, is that honoring people also helps with the process of learning. How does honoring people help with the process of learning? Ki az yischabru elav talmidim v'chaverim. By me honoring people, both my students and my friends, then they will connect with me, will be connected. V'yisu v'yitnu bedrushim lahotzia emes la'or. And once I have friends and once I have students, they will be connect. They will be able to have a back and forth. We'll go v'yisu v'yitnu. We'll go back and forth to try to find out what the truth is. Lo al derech nitzuach v'kantor, not because who's right and who's wrong in the sense of I want to win, I want to be first, I want my opinion to be heard. That's not what this is about. If I honor people, it's about getting to the truth with somebody else. V'hu yisod haTorah, amar v'ahavt l'recha kamocha. This is what loving others is all about. U'mida zu hi l'misha yirtzu li'os lo koach ha-zocher b'kinyan mitzad ha-masa u'matan. In order for me to learn better, to remember better, to retain information better, I need to be able to engage with my peers and engage with my students, and that's not going to happen unless I honor and respect and treat them nicely. So if you want to learn better, make sure you honor your students, because in that way, you'll be able to engage in the back and forth in order to clarify and to get to the truth. So what you see from the first source is just a very straightforward educational message. You could articulate this in a journal, is that the importance of the student-teacher relationship and the honor that they give each other helps with the back and forth of the learning process, which helps with retainment of information. In the next source, it's taken from the Sefer Lechem Shemayim from Rav Yaakov Emden. He says four different explanations for why is it that teaching helps me learn better. And the first one is exactly what the researchers argued in the second point that they made that we read before, and that is Shitzarach bal korchach laharim kol belimudo. Once I'm teaching somebody else, it makes me verbalize, it makes me articulate. And al yedei kach talmudo miskayim. It is through the verbalization, it is through the articulation that my memory works better and my learning will then therefore be sustained. Right? So the same message of that through the learning process, through the teaching process, my learning is better because I'm communicating it, and that helps with the communication, and that's clear within the literature as well. Number two, he says, va'od shechaverecha yikaimu biyadecha, that your friends, umitamida yoser mikulam, and your students will help by engaging with them, as we've seen, will help you understand better. He doesn't elaborate on how that happens, but you can insert everything we've said until now, that in the process of engaging with my students, I can understand things better. I can learn from them. Sometimes they give me an insight that I didn't see. They make me think about things in a way that I've never thought about before through the challenging aspect of it. Now, number three is a fascinating one. He says, "V'gam kil esa zikna v'achulsha kishashayach tamudo atalmin yaskirenu." That if I have students, when I get old, I'm going to forget everything, but my students remember it because I taught that to them. So they're going to help me remember what I forgot when I get older. So that's a cute one. And then finally, and this transitions us into I think what Judaism offers in addition to the research that we saw, is milvad zchus halimud im zulaso she'omed lo laknoso haTorah kinyan olam, is that there's a zchus, there's a merit that's involved with me learning with somebody else that allows my Torah to be sustained? What is this merit? What do I gain from learning with somebody else that has this spiritual merit to it? So let's delve into this a little bit more. The Medrash Shmuel on the Mishnah that says that one of the 48 ways to learn is to teach. Halomed al manas lamed. I'm learning in order to teach. So why is it? Why is it that learning in order to teach helps me learn? So he gives two explanations. V'zeh ki yadua ki amispalal al chavero hu ne'enetchila. So we have another fascinating concept. Now let's say I need something and my friend needs something. So I can daven for myself, he can daven for himself. But what we know is that the suggestion is that I should daven for him. And if I daven for him, then I'm going to get answered for my stuff too. Again, you don't necessarily do that for the sake of you getting your own stuff, right? If I have the right mindset that I want my friend to get helped and I'm davening for my friend to get helped, Chazal tell us that we're going to be helped also. Right? So if you take that paradigm here, that by me wanting to help somebody else, I myself am helped. If my whole purpose is in order to teach others, who ne'enetchila, then I will be answered first, meaning, God grants me the ability to remember and to learn. So it's a gift from God because I am being selfless by engaging somebody else, by teaching somebody else. And then he continues, Ve'efshar od ki kashera adam lomed al manas lamed tiskayim bo torasa v'loish kechana kolomar biyoser chozer umilamda lacherim b'chol eshalamda zokra v'talmuda miskayim biyado. So now he transitions from an educational approach to a spiritual approach, and in the second answer that he gives, he says that by me teaching others, I'm going to remember it better, lo yishkachan, I'm not going to forget it, because I'm reviewing it, and I'm teaching it, so there's more time, there's more review, and every time I go over something, and every time I review it, I'm going to remember it better. So he has two hypotheses, two explanations as to why teaching enhances learning. One, we'll start with the second one. The second one is just basic education, educational psychology, that when I teach, I am reviewing it, and by reviewing it, I'm going to retain it. And the second explanation is the spiritual element, is that by me caring about somebody else and being selfless to be able to teach what I have to others and not hoarding it or containing it for myself, God grants me the gift that it's opened, that my prayers are answered, as it were, and that I'll be able to learn and understand better as well. So there's an educational answer, and there's a spiritual answer. And then I think it really frames it, if you think about it, this opens it up. It expands what our goal is. Why am I teaching? What's the point here? And teaching for, within the Torah context, is not just a vocation, and it's not just a job, and it's not just something that I get paid for, and that's true for non-Torah teachers as well on some level. But within a Torah context, it takes on a whole new, broader perspective in terms of what teaching is to our religious selves. And let's look at that from two different perspectives. The first one is in terms of responsibility, sense of purpose, a sense of responsibility. If you remember, we started off with that there's a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. It's a mitzvah to teach. It's not just a nice idea. It's not just a job. It's not just something that I get reward for. It's a mitzvah. It's an obligation to teach, and it's a commandment to teach. And if you look at this source here, the Medrash Shmuel, jumping off of the Mishnah, Perek Bey's Mishnah Ches, the Mishnah says, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai kibo mehillel v'shamai. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai used to say as follows, Im lamadta Torah harbe al tachsik tova la'atzmacha. If you've learned a lot of Torah, don't give yourself, as they translated here, do not claim credit for yourself. Al tachsik tova la'atzmacha. Don't congratulate yourself. Don't think you're so special. Ki l'kach notzarta. That's why you were created. That's your job. So that's one way of looking at it, is that don't be so haughty and arrogant to think I'm so great because I learned a lot of Torah. That's your mission. That's your job. But look how the Medrash Shmuel understands it. Second, it's totally another level of understanding here that's relevant to us. So he says here, Inami, Amar, im lamata Torah harbe, if you learned a lot of Torah, vas sakta Torah harbe, and you've attained a lot of Torah, Al tachzik tova shehi hatora la'atzmacha lecha levad. He understands it not that don't congratulate yourself. Al tachzik tova la'atzmacha. Don't think you're so great. Don't say I'm so good. Al tachzik tova. Don't grab the tova. What's the tova? Ki lekach tov nasati lachem. The Torah is the tova. The Torah is the good. So don't hoard the good for yourself. Al tachzik. Don't grab and contain the tova, the good of the Torah, la'atzmecha, for yourself. V'lo teratzel lamed la'acherim. And I'm not going to teach others because it's just for me. I don't have time to teach you. I want to learn by myself. I want to know for myself. And I want to engage God on my own. That's not the goal. Rak yafutsu mayanosecha chutza. Let your waters burst forth. Va'al tachzik osa la'atzmecha. Don't keep it to yourself, levad. Ki lekach notzarta. This is why you were born. Why were you born? Why were you created? Lilmod ulilamed. To learn and to teach. Umechuyov ato lilamed lacherim. And you are obligated to teach others. This is a responsibility. This is a mitzvah. This is an obligation. We can't just contain the knowledge to ourselves. We have to spread it. It's a duty. It's a responsibility. And then the final source before we close up is that the purpose is not just about responsibility, but the purpose is about love. It's about others. It's about giving. If you look here, we'll start with the Shla on the top. The Shla Kadosh is within a complicated discussion, which maybe you're familiar with, is what's better? Is it better to learn or is it better to do? Is the Medrash Iker or is the Maisa Iker? Learning better or action better? And it's a complicated discussion. There's various Gemaras, various ways to understand those Gemaras. The way he frames it up is like this. Haklal ola midivrei shneihem. Kiloa medrashua ikar rakamaisa. He says it's not learning's not the essential piece, it's action. Al kain, lishtadal achar maisim tovim shiyeshnam lasosam adif yoser milasasik belimud. It's better to try to do good things, do good deeds, do mitzvos, than sit and learn. That's his assumption. The honey mili belimud shal atzmo, but that only applies if it's a learning of the self, if it's by myself I'm learning. Aval lelamed acherim. If I'm teaching others, az halimud yoser adif, then teaching is better than action. Why? Kihu kalu mi talmud umi maisa. Teaching includes learning and action. Shezeh ba'atzmo maisa tov, because it's a good, beneficial, positive action that I'm doing. It's a mitzvah for others, mashem lelamed acherim, that I'm teaching others. So it's not a forced choice between learning versus action. If I'm teaching, then I'm both learning and doing action. So that takes precedent over everything. Right? That's what teaching's about. Teaching's about not just learning, but it's about doing. It's about doing for others. In the Yaivitz in source number, in the second source on this slide, also says that part of teaching, it's hard to read the, it's an old script, but I'll say it outside, is that part of Lilmod Amanas Lalamed, learning in order to teach, is that by me wanting to teach others, that shows my character. It shows my positive strengths that I'm not self-contained. I'm not somebody who only cares about me. Is that I want to engage others. I want to help others. And then finally, to frame it, the Ramban, as he talks about in Sefer Vayikra, he talks about the mitzvah of Ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha, to love others like ourselves. One of the examples that he gives that demonstrates our love for others is that we want good for others. What do we want for others? We want them to have material good, but we also want them to have knowledge. We want them to understand things, to have wisdom. So being a teacher is somebody who wants to impart knowledge and wisdom out of love, because we want to do good for others. We want to teach others. We want to do chesed to others. So there's a mitzvah to teach. That's the last slide. It's a duty. It's a commandment. And there's also an element of pro-social action here. This is a chesed. It's a mitzvah bein adam l'chaveru, and it's a mitzvah bein adam l'makom, between us and God and between us and our fellow, because it's a act of love to teach. And because of this, how can we not learn in order to teach? Right? Learning in order to teach is so essential, not just because it helps us remember better, and not just because it creates good relationships with our students, and not just because it helps us communicate better, and all of the benefits that we said before about learning in order to teach. But learning in order to teach provides us that purpose, that mission, the mitzvah, the love, the compassion for others, and that drives us to want to keep going and to do it more, and gets us the reward of and fulfilling what God wants us to do. That's above and beyond anything that we can gain just from the cognitive aspects of learning in order to teach. Learning in order to teach is our mission. It is our duty, and it is our purpose that we want to help others as well. And so I'm going to conclude with the following thought. And usually that means that there's going to be like a 1 minute concluding thought. This is a relatively lengthy concluding thought. So bear with me for a few more minutes. Who are we talking to? Who is this message for? Is it a message for just teachers? Is it a message for students? So there's a fascinating idea developed by Rabbi Sacks, where he says that what's unique about Judaism is that we are all a nation of teachers. And this is how he develops the idea. You picture yourself in the setting that we are on the brink of freedom. We're in Egypt. We're in Mitzrayim. We're about to be free. Moshe is now giving a speech to the Jewish people before they leave. And Rabbi Sacks says, we'll read it inside because it's hard to emulate and articulate as geniusly as he does. And now the time had arrived. The Israelites were on the brink of their release. Moses, their leader, gathered them together and prepared to address them. What would he speak about at this fateful juncture, the birth of a people? He could have spoken about many things. He might have talked about liberty, the breaking of their chains, and the end of slavery. He might have talked about the destination to which they were about to travel, the land flowing with milk and honey. Or he might have chosen a more somber theme, the journey that lay ahead, the dangers they would face, what Nelson Mandela called the long walk to freedom. Any one of those would have been the speech of a great leader sensing an historic moment in the destiny of Israel. Moses did none of these things. Instead, he spoke about children and the distant future and the duty to pass on memory to generations yet unborn. Three times in this week's Parshas Bo Sedra, not this week's, but when he's writing this week's Sedra, Parshas Bo, he turns to the theme. And when your children ask you, what do you mean by this rite? You shall say, etc. And you shall explain to your child on that day, it is because of what the Lord did for me when I went free from Egypt. And when in the time comes, your child asks you, saying, what does this mean for you? You shall say to him, we should be familiar with this from either Parshas Bo or the Haggadah. Your children will ask. And Rabbi Sacks sums it up. About to gain their freedom, the Israelites were told that they had to become a nation of educators. That is what made Moses not just a great leader, but a unique one. What the Torah is teaching is that freedom is won not on the battlefield, nor in the political arena, nor in the courts, national or international, but in the human imagination and will. To defend a country, you need an army. But to defend a free society, you need schools, you need families, and an educational system in which ideals are passed on from one generation to the next and never lost or despaired of or obscured. So Jews became the people whose passion was education, whose citadels were schools, and whose heroes were teachers. We are a nation of educators. It's not just if it's my profession, and it's not just about if I work in a school. We are all educators. The mitzvah of Talmud Torah is universal to learn. We need to learn. We need to teach. Because as we started off, those are reciprocal. They go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. You can't split the lomade and the lalamade. And what this, and this is the last point, if we take Rabbi Sacks one step further, the psukim that he alluded to in this slide, when your children will ask you, what do you mean by this rite? So I think there's an even bigger depth here. When does Moshe tell the Jewish people, when your children will ask you, what do you mean by this rite? And you shall tell them, here's the psukim. Moses summoned all the leaders of Israel and said to them, go pick out lambs for your families and slaughter the Passover offering. Take a bunch of hyssop, dip it in the blood that is the basin, and apply some of the blood that is in the basin to the lentil and the two doorposts. None of you shall go outside the door of this house till morning. So this is the Korban Pesach. They have to go paint the blood on the doorpost. For when the Lord goes to smite the Egyptians, he will see the blood on the lintel and the two doorposts, and the Lord will pass over the door and not let the destroyer enter and smite your home. You shall observe this as an institution for all time, for you and for all your descendants. So Moshe is teaching them about the laws of Korban Pesach before they actually did the Korban Pesach. And now he continues, and when you enter the land that Hashem will give you, and he has promised, you shall observe this rite. And when your children ask you, what do you mean by this rite? You should say, it's the Passover sacrifice to Hashem, because he passed over the houses of the Israelites in Egypt when he smote the Egyptians but saved their houses. The people then bowed low in homage, and they went and they did so. Just as Hashem commanded Moshe and Aaron, so they did. And here's my point. He tells them that before they even do the act, before the experience, you should already be thinking, how am I going to articulate and verbalize and communicate this experience to my children and to my grandchildren and to my great-grandchildren? Our purpose in life is to teach. Everything we experience, everything we do should be framed on Lilmod Amanas Lalamed. Every experience, every learning opportunity that we have for ourselves, our brains should be, we should be thinking, how am I going to teach this over to my kids, to my students, to my neighbors, to my friends, to myself, to the platypus, to the rubber duck? How am I going to communicate this to something else and to somebody else? Because I'm Lilmod Amanas Lalamed is so essential for my own learning experience, is that everything should be colored by how can I teach this? How can I communicate this? That I learn better because of that, and it also keeps us driven with the passion that this is our mission. Our mission is Ki L'Kach Notzarta. This is why we are born. We are born to teach. We are a nation of educators. And if we remember this reciprocal relationship between Lilmod and Lalamed, and Lilmod Amanas Lalamed, that everything we should do should be framed within learning in order to teach and teaching in order to learn, then I think we will be much better off for ourselves, we'll be much better off for our students, and we'll be much better off for all of Klal Yisrael to really live this impassioned plea and our mission as a Jewish people to be the nation of educators.